So again, good morning, everyone. And just a reminder for anyone who joined us late, we are also in the last morning of this three-day retreat, Cultivating Patience and Acceptance. So together, even though those of us in retreat earlier this morning, we had our final talk in closing circle. But here we are, and listening to the verse just recited, we're reminded that we are coming back to our breath, not simply to calm ourselves, but our purpose is liberation. Freedom from the superiority complex, the inferiority complex, and the equality complex. All the various stands, all the very complexes that self takes in the world, with itself and with everyone else. And this last 3 days, we have been very intensely looking into a very matter in relationship to self. And the way it shows up in the world, significant very much to our own well-being and harmony, even more significant to our well-being and harmony of our relations to others, especially people that we are close to, and even more importantly, the world and what's going on in the world. So, you know, the defamations, deformations of ego are myriad, but in Buddhism, there are certain ones that are considered, you know, like poisons, major contaminants, major afflictions. And the one that has a special significance is anger. So this was a retreat about patience, but it really was a retreat about how to handle anger, which is not usually the way we see it. Usually, you know, the antidote to anger is anger management. We have a whole field in our world called anger management. You got to get yourself to some anger management training. Some of you might have been told that even in your life. But again, our usual way is to kind of manage the anger, manage the aggression, so it doesn't spill out, so to speak. And certainly anger management training, I used to do it myself, is certainly, you know, helpful to people who, and it's usually people who are aggressive with their anger. But in Buddhism, anger is much more than that. Anger, again, is considered one of the most significant of the emotional afflictions because it is hot. Other ones are cooler, heavier, such as worry, anxiety, fear, or sadness, or doubt, or even desire and things like that. But nothing disturbs the mind like anger. Nothing agitates and upsets the mind like anger. Nothing, when we're in it, so covers it and so makes us so unconnected to anything wholesome, such as anger. And nothing has the potential of creating such harm than anger. So because of its internal high level of disturbance that it causes a practitioner, but also because its social manifestation is most harmful to our relationships with others and to the harmony of society. Anger needs to be looked at. And one of the reasons that in Buddhism, anger is so singled out is because the fundamental approach of how we enter the world as Buddhists is based on ahimsa, which is often translated as nonviolence, but it really means doing no harm. We don't want to do harm. We don't want to hurt. We don't want to harm ourselves, and we don't want to harm anyone else. So this is kind of the fundamental basis of all Buddhist ethics and right action. Again, there is nothing that disturbs our capacity and our aspiration to do no harm than when we get angry. And as I say these words, take a moment to reflect. Is that true in your own life? When you have gotten angry, enraged in the actions of our speech, and perhaps even with the actions of our body, have we not hurt? Have we not done harm? And at the same time, have we not been the recipients of others' angers, others' angry words, others' angry actions and behavior? So we know there's something significant, different than the other afflictions, about anger. And we know many good relationships, many things that we build up of positive things, even our own spiritual practice, in a bout of anger, can be destroyed. And then we have to do a lot of repair work afterwards. So people came to a retreat on patience and acceptance, and they got a lot of, in the beginning, that is, talk about anger. Because we cannot get to patience and acceptance if we don't deal with that which is most disturbing to our patience and acceptance, which is anger. And when we talked about anger, we don't just talk about, full-blown anger. We talk about the seeds of anger. The seeds of anger are much milder. And they often manifest as annoyances, or irritations, frustrations. There are many people who believe that they're not angry people, and yet if they really watch their mind, as we've been doing the last 3 days, notice there is a high degree throughout the day, petty annoyances, petty frustrations, that's going on all the time. It's what we call a low hum. And I would call that a low hum of anger, of resistance to the world. Resistance to what's going on in the world. When I say the world, I mean, it's so funny. We talk about the world, but we don't know the world. We only know the world through media. It's a fabricated world. The world we know is actually the world that's the immediacy of our direct experience. That's really our world. But through media and all that, we can imagine a whole world anywhere in the world. But it's all kind of through images and other people's, information. But when I talk about the world, I mean the whole thing. we have a fundamental resistance to the world and to what's going on in the world, and it's very immediate. We don't like the way people are treating us. We think they should treat us differently. They should talk to us differently. We think outcomes in life should be different. We think people's behaviors, they shouldn't be behaving the way they're doing. They should be behaving the way I think they should be doing. So our irritation frustration or anger at the world is not just the world out there. It's the very immediate world, and we're often angry at ourselves. In Buddhism, that's all called, we're impatient. We don't have patience with the way things are. And so we keep ourselves in a high state of agitation or a low state of agitation. But again, the low state of agitation are just the embers, the coals. And certain triggers, it flares up. And we wonder where it flared up from, because we don't consider ourselves an angry person, but it's because this low hum is always present in our life. I mean, always is a strong word, but watch your mind during the day. Just see how often your just little things annoy you. Little things bother you. Little things irritate us. So many little things. But they add up, they condition our mood. And they are when what is the source of that, as we learned about in the last 3 days and look deeply, are these basic fundamental rules, these unspoken, unconscious rules that we have about life. How life should be, and how life shouldn't be, how people should be, and how they shouldn't be, how my past should have been, how my future should be, how my present should be, how the people in my world how it should be, how the world should be, I mean, how everything should be. It's a total imposition of our self-view on the world, which left to itself would not be a problem, except it makes us angry. It disturbs us, and it causes us to be, to not be calm within ourselves, to not be open-hearted within ourselves. And again, it causes us to often act and do in ways that are controlling, manipulating, and harmful. And we see, while it plays out in the very simplicity and immediacy of our little lives, but we see when little people like us get power, and we go to Washington, or we go to London, or we go to wherever we go to centers of power, people continue the same. Right? Angry. People are angry at each other. On all sides. Equally. And the interesting thing about anger only creates more anger. So you're angry at somebody, you say angry words, what do? If they don't withdraw and hurt, nursing their wounds, planning revenge, they aggress back, they get angry back, and then they say this, and then they say this, and then they say this, and then you see that's what's just going on in the world. It is the source of all the violence, all the aggression, all the hatred, is angry. And what's underneath the anger? 6 billion people, individuals, all thinking that everybody else should be like them. Think like them, act like them, do like them. Again, underneath that, is the self. Now again, we talked somewhat about self and non-self, but I won't go into that here. But we certainly spend a lot of time in our community looking deeply into self and non-self, both the philosophical stance, most importantly, as a direct experience. So in Buddhism, the antidote to anger is patience, kshanti. And it has some characteristics of what we might call patience here in the West, which is sort of forbearance, endurance, and we all know that kind of patience. We are amazingly patient, and again, all around aversion, you have to be patient with happiness or good things. That, you know, that's not a problem, is it? Accepting happy things, good times, pleasure. I mean, that's not our problem. Our problem is with aversity. And that's very personal, what an aversive situation is, an aversive person is. One person's aversity is other person, somebody else's good time, right? You know, one politician that is aversive for us, other people think is the most wondrous thing since sliced bread. I mean, that's just the way it is. So it's very personal. But it's in the face of adversity that we have these problems. Now again, many of us are in our life have this kind of endurance and or patience for many things. If we're training for something, we're working out, we will put up with all kinds of adversity, pain, difficulty, you know. If we're, you know, going to school or training or working or making money, you know, I mean, we'll put up with all kinds of adversity. I mean, people will put up with traffic. You know, many people get into traffic and they, you know, it's like one of those big ones. But obviously, you know, they're not commuters. When you're a commuter, you understand what? Yeah, I put up with an hour commute in the morning, an hour commute going back. This is what it is, right? It's not aversive, it's just normal. So there are all kinds of difficulties, aversive situations that in our pursuit of things we want, pursuit of pleasure, you know, that we are quite patient with. So what are the things that we are impatient with? That cause us to be frustrated, angry, annoyed. And why is that? Well, in Buddhism, the answer is not to be patient. Patience is something that arises out of understanding causes and conditions. So it's deeper than just an imposition of this thing called patience. Patience. It's sort of a resignation, kind of endurance. So I think many people see in patience. But in Buddhism, patience comes out of understanding that every situation, every person is the way they are because of causes and conditions. So it is a patience that and more long-term and more they practice patience situation to situation. But in this tradition, once one really understands that everything, including ourselves, is simply the product of causes and conditions. For most people, they are the servants, they are the slave of their causes and conditions. They have no self-awareness, they are just acting out the way they've been conditioned over life. They don't have a clue that there is another way to be. And yet we sit and demand that the world be different than it is, and people be different than they are, because they don't meet with our approval. Because they don't see it our way. We get angry. We get hurt. We get disappointed. We despair. Why? Because the world is not the way I want it to be. People aren't the way I want them to be. My childhood is not the way, was not the way I want it to be. You know, so we carry this anger, this frustration. And at the core, you know, from a belief point of view, it's because we do not understand that everything is the product of causes and conditions. Nothing comes out of nowhere. Everything is dependent on everything else, including us. We are here together right now, present to each other, as we are. But how many of us, as we sit here, as we are, understand that everything that we are thinking, and the way we're receiving this talk, and the way it's filtering through us, and the way all this stuff is a product of our own causes and conditions. That we are also something that has been produced by causes and conditions. Our physical body and our mental body have all been produced by causes and conditions. And the only reason we are responding the way, thinking the way we're doing, is because of prior causes and conditions. How many of us even have insight into ourselves? They don't understanding about ourselves right now. And if we don't have that about ourselves, how can we have that with our loved ones, the people we live with, our partners, our friends, our work colleagues, our Sangha brothers and sisters, our neighbors, the people in our city, our town, our community, in the world, if we don't have that understanding about ourselves? So when we understand causes and conditions, and that that's all that's really going on, we can be patient and understanding, because we accept reality as it is in this moment. This is very important. In this moment, we accept reality as it is. It doesn't mean we can't make a difference to change things going forward. You see, it doesn't mean that how we are showing, the world is showing up in this moment, we cannot respond in a different way going forward. But in this moment, we understand whatever is happening because of causes and conditions. Now, everybody is showing up in this moment is because of causes and conditions. They can't help it. They cannot help being who they are in this moment. Just like none of us can help it. But when we understand that, we understand how essential it is that we can practice. Because through the practice of self-awareness and mindfulness, and through the practice of all the wholesome minds, we have the capability of changing. And we have to be honest with ourselves. Even those of us who know all this don't even do it half the time. So why are we so frustrated with the world? Angry at the world? It's a good question to ask ourselves. So when we are patient, based on understanding, not by imposing, not because we're long-distance runners who endure, because we totally understand and accept the world as it is, then anger, irritation, annoyance, frustration are gone. Just close your eyes a minute and just imagine what your life, day, mind would be like if anger, irritation, annoyance, frustration, agitation, all those things were not present in your mind. Really, just imagine, even if you don't believe it yet. What would that be like? Again, one of the things we know about anger and agitation and irritation and all these kind of negative mind states is they tend to ruminate and repeat. it's not a one-time affair. So when we're irritated about something, angry about something, we ruminate over and over and over. So it's not just a one, it's not a brief encounter. We don't just get angry because somebody did something or somebody didn't do something or things aren't going our way or, you know, we don't get angry, you know. We play it over and over again and we talk about it and we just build it up. So it takes up a lot of space. It conditions us. It creates seeds in our mind that will continue to come up, cannot help but come up. And anger is like a fire, you see. It'll burn anything. It's just always looking for more fuel. See, we think we're angry because of what's going on out there, but we're angry because the seeds of anger in us, and it's always looking for something to get. If we have those seeds, it's always looking for something to be angry about. Something to be annoyed about. It's just endlessly scanning. It'll be angry that a mosquito bit it. It'll be angry because of global warming. It'll be angry because of politics. It'll be angry because our husband didn't, you know, put the top back on the toothpaste. I mean, you know, it'll be angry about anything. Because the anger is inside us. We carry it with us. And we impose it on the world. But it can be eradicated. I mean, that's a strong statement, but that is the goal. It's a process. But certainly, you know, renouncing anger as our go-to and renouncing its friends, irritation, annoyance, frustration, is a good way to begin. And if you realize, gee, that your mind does gives a lot of space to these afflictive emotions, and if you could imagine being free of them, think about all that space, all that mental space that is now available to you. For what? For kindness? For understanding, for compassion, for generosity. I mean, all those, you know, now there's space in our minds for the wholesome, which is really what we're doing most of our work with. But we got to create space for it. So that is why the path, even though we want to get onto the good stuff, we want to get onto love and compassion and all the good stuff. If we don't clear out the space, if we don't make room, and if we don't, you know, they're called toxins, they're called poisons, they're not benign. I mean, when I look at the news and I just, you know, flip from one to another, I just go angry, 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 hate, you know, angry. I mean, that's not alone, but I mean, there are other things, but I mean, it's amazing when you look at it that way and you listen, you go, you know, just angry. Pictures, angry people, angry at each other. And I assure you, they're not just angry out in public. They're angry at home. We're angry at home. Because the anger is something that's inside us. There's no anger outside us. There's only life out there. Things happening. How we respond to how things happening, that comes from within us. And whether we respond with anger, or whether we respond with love or understanding, whether we respond with violence or nonviolence. And a lot of it has to do with what kind of world we want. Because the world is only created by the actions of beings, and beings are, you know, are the creators of the causes. If we want different effects, we have to create different causes. And it begins with us individually. So what I'd like to do now is ask a couple of the people in the hall who are on retreat to share with you their kind of firsthand experience, not sort of the topics of retreat. I try to do a little of that, but more just their personal experience, their personal journey in 5 or 10 minutes. And then if we have time, we'll take some questions. So why don't we begin, Kevin? Kevin is here. Kevin has been with us in the hall. Kevin is a member from Gainesville and very helpful to our community in many ways. And this is, by the way, all unrehearsed. I just asked them if they would do that. So I have no idea what they're going to say.
Good morning. So for me, when I made the decision to come on retreat, one of the things I try to create for myself is just to show up without a lot of expectations. So I did show up. There was a topic. So I showed up, wasn't so focused on the topic of patience and acceptance, but where I was led so graciously by Fred and Ken and Diane was looking deeply. And I was kind of irritated a little bit by where we went. You know, we Ken and Diane took us some places that I really didn't want to go in kind of reflecting. But as I've come to learn from hanging around Fred, is that's part of the process. And so I welcomed it and embraced that. What was really interesting for me in the process is I don't think of myself as an angry person. But taking the time and looking at what Fred referred to as a low hum, what I realized is I have a lot of rules for myself and for how other people are supposed to show up in my world. And as I reflected on that, I could see all the places of my irritation surface anytime anybody stepped outside of those rules. And it's that type of experience that I don't notice in my day-to-day. But having the opportunity to be on retreat, to be in silence, it was really, really good. And then from that, it's how to move back into, we're in a bit of a bubble on retreat, how to take that back and watch where those rules come up in my day-to-day and in my relationships with loved ones and work colleagues and Sangha members. One other thing from the retreat that was really poignant for me, I think of the term as Thay would say, Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, beginning anew, a beginner's mind. But in many of the meditations, Fred used the term of starting at zero. And I really liked that concept that I come into my process of sitting and moving in the world kind of with right where I am now. And the last thing that I would share in terms of my retreat experience was to pick it up, to look at it deeply. And then Fred reminded us to put it down and just rest in that kind of natural mind and that awareness. For me, if I don't allow myself to put it down, then even though it started as a reflection, I might stay with that and not really relax. So that putting it down and relaxing seems to be so key for me in terms of my practice, not on the cushion so much, but being able to take that out and be out and about in my world.
So good morning, dear Sangha. So this retreat has come at a time as we're studying Shantideva. And the patience chapter in which we're on, verse 7, Fred started the retreat with this. And this is the verse that I've been looking at. It says, getting what I do not want and all that hinders my desire in discontent, my anger is fueled as it, and it grows and beats me down. It's something to that. And that really struck me this time, because I knew I had to look deeper, you know, into what that meant, because I know there was truth to that. In my life, I've looked at the greater ways in which anger manifests, perhaps, and I thought I had, you know, kind of rid myself of those, and maybe the big acting outs I have, and yet the subtle discontent, and sometimes not so subtle, it does beat me down, and it's all related to me, to a strong sense of self. And so this retreat was really a way to look deep into that verse and to acknowledge that it completely robs myself, this anger, of the joy that I want to bring into the world. That is life, is to be alive, is to be joyful and to share love and, you know, understanding. And this is my aspiration. And so we were asked to write our aspiration Thursday night, and when it started the retreat, and, you know, I did, it seems quite lofty, but, you know, to be free, I want to be free. And the teachings are pointing us to look really, you know, deep, and to free ourselves of this attachment to this anger that is related to a strong sense of me in the world and my convictions and my wants and my needs and my desires. And so up until now, I mean, I've been kind of still pruning, I've even cut some roots, I might say. Yet I still have some strong, deep roots that I know need a lot more to be looked at and to be continually cut, you know, so in the hopes that one day they will be severed so I can show up free to respond to people and life in this real way. And so I used a scenario that happened a couple weeks ago. It was related, you know, being stuck in the, I should say, but being in the house a lot is not our norm. And so there's already like a missing or something, a dissatisfaction with the fact that I can't go out. And so it's low, right? It's a low level and I'm aware of it. So I'm trying to be mindful of my interactions with my partner and what have you. But I was feeling kind of agitated one day. I could feel it. So I went out and I said, I got to do something for some, got to get out of this head and do something. So I went out to pick up trash in the neighborhood and something, you know, I have a pincer and what have you. So I was picking up trash and it was feeling good. I was outside. I was active doing something, you know, just letting my mind be at ease, picking up trash. And what do you know, but a car pulled up right in the little intersection there. And the guy, he looked at me and he tossed something out right in front of me. And, you know, I have to admit, dear Sangha, I totally cursed. It came out and I haven't done, like, that was so immediate fire in me. And I called, I mean, I didn't like lash at his car or throw anything, but I called him a name, like under my breath, you know, and then I kind of just like, you know, then I went out there with my pincer and picked up the item he threw down. And it's so funny now, you know, but that, there it was right in my face. And here, that was even in the midst of doing something that I thought would be helpful to me. And yet, so it actually came really great time during for this retreat because it was still alive in me. So in this retreat, we had an opportunity to kind of really take it piece by piece, slow it down. And I was able to see how I wasn't angry at the other trash. There was plenty of trash. I wasn't ruminating about other people throwing stuff down, or the trash itself didn't cause me up until that moment. But the moment that I was involved, that he threw something down in front of me and violated, you know, the earth wasn't upset about it. You know, no one, he did. So I learned and I really saw very clearly that if I would reframe that, have a different relationship to that, you know, perhaps I could have just laughed like now and said, trash happens, or, you know, trash, or, you know, just kind of some sadness for him too, because he's suffering. You know, when someone does that, he's suffering to throw trash out. He isn't connected, you know, and so that's a source of suffering. So yeah, so this retreat's given a time to really reflect deeply, and also it's invigorated my practice again. I shared this on the call with our small group, but that I had, you know, we have so many deep teachings and so many teachings and opportunities here, and there's times when everything's kind of status quo, and I had been practicing, I meditate, what have you, but, you know, when I'm really learning something new, or, you know, sometimes I take notes and I really kind of set structure a little different when I'm intensely, and anger is something that I believe for me takes a little bit, step up my game a little bit. Like I need to approach it in a way with a little bit more fervor, you know, and a smile I've found is so helpful. So yeah, I feel reinvigorated to look deeply and to acknowledge, as Fred was saying, it's not an imposition. Being patient, that was another thing kind of learned. I still wasn't 100% clear. It's not something we impose on like another thing we do. It's a state of in which we are by an understanding, by a deeper, it's below. It's just deeper, like a understanding of how things are in reality. And in those moments, when I get angry like that, I'm just in opposition to reality. I'm not accepting things as they are, and I can see that. So, was very fruitful. I had opportunities on the bell as well, but miscues on my part. I take responsibility, I hope. And it just was, it was good practice for me, because even those that I highly respect and feel so dear to and highly respect, I can get agitated. And yet, because I know that, you know what I mean? It's like, wow, this is not where I want to reside. This is not who and what I aspire to, you know, to how to show up. So I thank you, Fred. And I thank all of you for this opportunity.
Did a stellar job on AV over the retreat. There was some significant, even more than snafus, like the whole Wi-Fi went down. So, but Maggie and Paul and Bill saved the day. So, Maggie.
So, I'm so happy to be here and share, which normally I wouldn't say. Because sharing used to be a source of irritation and a source of kind of constriction. But yeah, going into this retreat, you know, patience retreat, it sounded so soft and easy and light. And it was like, oh, this is going to be fabulous. And luckily, retreats are a nice container to do some real transformation. So the first night, I think all of the people on retreat shortly realized that it's not all just soft patience, that might be the path that we're going towards, but we really need to do some real transformation work with those tougher things, like anger, like irritation. And, you know, anger is present with everyone. I think Fred even said it at one point, like most people at the end of a retreat say, oh, I never thought I was angry. And I was definitely one of those people. But, you know, those minor irritations, I think I'm starting to realize when some of those minor irritations or frustrations happen, they are significant. And it struck me, actually, I think earlier today, it's kind of like a paper cut. it's not like you're not in a major accident or anything like that, but a little tiny paper cut really hurts. And every time you get a paper cut, every time you're irritated, every time I'm irritated throughout the day, it's like multiple paper cuts. And I don't want to live my life with going around in that much pain, because those little paper cuts really hurt. So this container of a retreat I'm so grateful to have this, especially during this pandemic and still being able to put on retreats. And so slowing things down and really taking the time to kind of explore deeply inside of this body, inside of the chatter, of the little nuances that are happening every single moment. So I'm seeing those little paper cuts in a lot of different moments that I never really paid attention to. And so I can give you a couple examples. I think I shared some with my small group, so I apologize to them for a repeat. But there was one morning, we start here at 6:30. So in the morning, there's not much traffic. And so I went home at night for this. It's a long drive, just a straight down Hillsborough Avenue, and no one's on the road, but all of a sudden, red light, red light, red light. And I'm like, it's 6 in the morning. Why am I hitting all these red lights? And then as I shared with my group, I was like, well, these red lights are out to get me. someone is turning these red lights, or I don't know what exactly the chatter was, but it was something about me, like, how dare these red lights go off, which is so silly. And I quickly, because we're in this beautiful container of a couple days, I pretty quickly realized that it was like, Maggie, what what gives you the right to not want to stop for a red light that is saving many lives? I mean, it's there for a reason, so I should be grateful that we have something like a red light. So just noticing in each moment, but not only the noticing, but also recognizing the importance of it. And seeing that if I allow myself to indulge in that deluded sense of that red light shouldn't be there because I need to get somewhere, me, right? Then even that moment can lead to another moment, which takes me back to the paper cut, really. Is then I'm just putting on more paper cuts on myself. That energy, you know, everybody's trying their best. And if I'm having that energy, then when I come across the next person, that energy might go to that next person. And I might miss something in the next moment. So I'm seeing, and Fred brought one of the verse, the very early, I think it's one or two of Shanti Deva's chapter here, of the importance of, you know, cutting this off. Because if I'm, you know, my aspiration is to be a free person so I can help other people. So if I'm working so hard and you know, every single day practice and everything like that, and Shanti Deva says at the very beginning, if you allow that minor irritation, or if you let anger come in, it essentially wipes all that out. And it's like, wow, that's so important. Like, it's as if, well, like what Fred was saying this morning, it's as if, you know, you're working for a marathon, and that little anger, that little irritation is like you forgetting that there's a crack in the sidewalk, and then you trip and you fall and break your leg, and now you can't run a marathon. Now you have nowhere to go. So I don't know if that made sense at all, but it just, this is so rich, and not only I'm talking a lot from my internal perspective, because in the container of silence, you do a lot of introspection, but I'm also seeing and anticipating going and interacting with the world, right? Because if I'm noticing this about myself, and, you know, genuinely, I want to be a good person and I want to help other people, and this is happening even just inside me, and I'm really working to notice that, everybody else is also going through all that, and everybody else, and they, if they're not as fortunate as we are to be in a place like this with a teacher and with these teachings, then they might not ever realize. So why get upset at them too, right? And why not just try to be patient with them and try to help them and try to allow them to be who they are? So, yeah, just it's so important. Something so small as anger that I never thought I had, but it is so important to even really just break it all open. So I don't know if any of that made sense, but thank you.
Yes, reflections on your experience at retreat. Hopefully that was meaningful to the community, to hear other people, peers, talk about their experience. But there Like you said, there were some questions being chatted in. If you want to chat in some questions, we have a little time.
Question is, what about those who struggle to express or be in touch with a healthy amount of anger? How does what we learn today apply to them?
Yeah, so again, you know, we learn general principles. I think the general principles are true, but they have to be applied. We live in a culture where the expression of anger is considered normal and good. And so it is very obvious that for many people, they think they got to get better at expressing their anger. Now, expressing anger is not the same as experiencing anger. This is important, right? To be present and acknowledge that one is angry is healthy. Is that clear? That is healthy. Because anger, like happiness, like fear, has its normal kind of functioning, and anger in certain situations can be energizing and alert us to something's wrong. It's an alert mechanism. It's like a light goes on. And so if there are people who aren't, who are not in touch with that feeling of anger, they're often denying themselves a very important feedback loop and connection to life. Now, it doesn't always mean that our anger is going off because of a perception, that our perception is correct. Many times our perceptions are wrong. But it's still, we practice mindfulness of feeling. So it's for people who are not in touch with anger, I think it's important to get in touch with their anger. But to get in touch with anger is to know that you have anger in you. Most people not only do not know they have anger in them, but then they cultivate it. Repeat, 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 repeat. Intensify, intensify. Minutes, hours, days, years, decades. That's dysfunctional. That's useless. That causes suffering. And that feeds into all the other hurts and angers that, you know, that we cultivate, and it gets big. So I think it's important that one is aware of anger, that knows that one knows how to be present to one's anger, know how to take care of one's anger. I mean, we're not talking about that now, but that's a big part of our practice. But we need to be very clear that anger is volatile. It is dangerous. If we are good at being present to our own anger and taking care of it, no problem. But if we don't know how to take care of our anger, and it very quickly spills out into words and actions, we can very easily do harm. So I distinguish between the experience of anger as a kind of self-awareness, normal kind of self-awareness, and how we expressed anger. In our awareness of our own anger, 100%. But in our expression of anger, be careful. Everybody on this call knows, just like Maria Teresa, knows that when we are angry, when we're highly irritated, annoyed, we say and do things that are unskillful or harmful. And you can't take them back. And if you think they don't do damage, even though somebody says, "I forgive you," it leaves a scar. How do I know that? Because everybody on this call has been the recipient of other people's anger. We know that. So that's what I would say about that.
Another question. You can understand and accept the way someone is, but that doesn't take away from the fact that the person's actions are wrong and hurtful to others. What are your recommendations for dealing with a person whose angry actions negatively impact those you love?
Yeah, obviously, this is important, you know, because then people go, but how about the injustices of the world, you know? Yes. As a Buddhist, we are called upon, as bodhisattvas, we are called upon to enter the world to heal it. That is the injunction that has been passed down to us for thousands of years for those of us on this bodhisattva path. The only difference between us and normal kind of good people is that we have an inner technology to eradicate all those things within ourselves. Now, in the face of somebody who's being angry? Yeah, obviously, I mean, we need to be intelligent. We need to have common sense. But we don't have to act out of anger. For us to get angry at somebody who is angry, anger clouds our mind. We do not think straight. We are being driven by emotionality, and it can be dangerous and very unskillful and make the situation work. So I think when you're dealing with an angry person, you need all your wits about you. You need your common sense. You need your understanding. You need your compassion, you know, and then you act. Sometimes there's something to be done to change the situation. Sometimes there's nothing to be done, and you need to remove yourself from the situation, right? I mean, that's a discernment. That means we have a certain kind of intelligence or wisdom to act skillfully in the world. But if we are angry, our mind cannot deal that way. So yeah, I mean, we need to act if action can be taken. Wisely, compassionately. I mean, one can be compassionate to somebody who is suffering and acting very wrong and still act very firmly and assertively. But we don't have to hate them. We don't have to be angry at them. We can feel bad for them. Just like children, you know, your children, your grandchildren. Sometimes you have to, you know, set limits on them. Sometimes you even may have to punish them. But you're doing it because you know they lack self-control. They lack self-awareness. They're not that developed yet. So sometimes we have to step in and set boundaries and do things like that. And you know, the truth is most adult human beings are emotionally somewhere, you know, between, 5 and 15. Right? I mean, let me just ask Maria Theresa when that guy threw down his... Yeah, there, you see how quick it is. We just immediately revert. So emotionally, I mean, it's important that if we can act, to act wisely.
What do we do when the anger is present? How can we deal with it constructively?
Yeah, so the first thing is mindfulness. Most of the time, anger is present, and we don't know it's present. So that knowing, you know, I'm aware that anger has arisen in me. I'm aware that impatience or annoyance or frustration has arisen in me. That is the first step. And then we need to correctly label it. Again, many people think it's perfectly normal and fine for them. I mean, you know, wouldn't anybody be angry at this? People, isn't it normal? No, it's not normal. It's something we've learned. And it's part of our egoistic need to have the world and everybody in it, you know, acting according to our rules. Right? So we need to be aware. We need to label it, wholesome, unwholesome, suffering, non-suffering. We need to put in the context of, you know, I've made a commitment, you know, not to cultivate anger. Making the commitment not to cultivate anger is not saying anger won't arise. Anger rises by itself. We don't have to do anything. Irritation, annoyance, anger. It just arises. you know, practice is what we do next when it's arisen. So with mindfulness and awareness, with labeling it correctly, for seeing it what it is, you know, and then we do something. And there are many different things that we can do. I mean, I won't go into that, you know. I mean, there are many different methods in Buddhism, but the most important thing is that we do something. Whether we take Shantideva's advice to be like a log, some points, whether it's we stop, if we have time, and try to see what's going on from the other person's perspective, the causes and conditions that have created, you know, that person who drove by, saw you doing it, and threw out a can, you know, who was that person? And do we really know? I mean, he might have thought it was funny. Maybe we don't know. I mean, we, right? But we don't know. He might have thought he was being funny. Or he might have thought, well, you know, poor woman, you know, she's out there looking for things to pick up, let me help her. So he could have been, you know, somebody to help you, you know, or he could have been a bodhisattva saying, she needs to work on her stuff, you know. Let me see what tell her that she's not as, you know, as you know, such a spirit she is. You know, who knows, right? So there's all kinds of ways of responding. The important thing is that we have a strategy. If we know that this is an issue for us, we need a strategy. We need to train ourselves in, it's really training yourself in nonviolence. Doing no harm. First thing, you know, so we work it within ourselves. So when we enter the world and we act, we do it from understanding, we do it from compassion, we do it from love, wanting to help. You know, I saw a picture the other day, you know, from the civil rights era, and I was involved in the civil rights in the 60s. And again, you saw it, you know. On one side was the mob and the police. And you know what? Angry. Angry, angry, angry. And the other side were the nonviolent people. They weren't angry. They were composed. They were patient. You know, and so you really saw very clearly the distinction. When you see both sides angry, yelling at each other, throwing things at each other, trying to hurt each other, you don't see the difference that one can enter the world in very different ways. Same way, you know, even if somebody's angry at us, saying harmful things to us, we do not have to respond in kind. We can. To be understanding doesn't mean we accept it. Accept it like we're resigned to it, but we understand that they can't help themselves. In this moment, they're wounded. In this moment, they're hurt. In this moment, their conditioning is being triggered. That's all. That's what's going on. They're lost in their conditioning. I understand that. I mean, wasn't it Jesus who said, love your enemies? I mean, he wasn't even a Buddhist, was he? I mean, it's known. What does that mean, love your enemies? Very profound. Yes. Oh, it's time. Yeah. So it's 5 of 12. This is the formal end of the talk, and now there'll be announcements. And the formal end of the retreat. I want to bow to everybody. I am so deeply appreciative to have 90 of you on this journey of sharing these wonderful Buddhist teachings on how to cultivate the mind of acceptance and patience, even though you got kind of knocked around a little bit in the storms of the anger continuum. It is. You know, if we don't go through the mud, we'll never grow lotuses. So thank you, everyone.